This is episode 52, When Comedy and Yoga Combine. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, clinical health psychologist and mind-body coach, here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, functional nutritionist and nurse practitioner. Together, we have over 25 years of experience in wellness, nursing, nutrition, and psychology. Our goal at Everyday Wellness is to share easy strategies to help as many people as possible become healthier. You can help us attain this goal by leaving us a rating and review on iTunes. The process takes just a few minutes, and it allows our podcast to be seen when listeners like you are searching for a high-quality health and wellness podcast. We are so grateful that you are here. And now, let's get started.
Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today.
Good morning. We are super excited today to have Dina Jackson with us. She is a stand-up comedian and speaker who teaches hatha yoga and meditation. She's performed at various comedy festivals across the United States and Canada, and recently, actually late last 2018, delivered an amazing TED Talk and can be heard regularly on Sirius XM radio. She actually completed her yoga teacher training in Goa, India, and hosts a podcast called The Ego Podcast, which I actually participated in and was wonderful. And this podcast consists of interviews of yoga instructors, mental health professionals, individuals in recovery, artists, and lawyers, asking them what tactics they use to find balance in their lives. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, such good stuff. Well, we're so excited to talk to you today. And I think perhaps the most obvious question is how you came to marry your love for comedy and yoga, and which came first?
The chicken or the egg?
Yeah, they're two very different things. I called them my yin and yang because they kind of touch on the creative side and then the mindfulness side. So comedy definitely came first. I've been doing stand-up for 6 years now, and I've been performing and I did improv before that in theater, so I've been in that realm for 20-some-odd years, so a long time. And yoga came a little bit later when I was going through some trouble in my own life. I went through a divorce, and I lost my father, and some sort of trying moments that we often go through in life that sort of hit you like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. And I definitely needed something to help me cope, because I had no idea how to manage my emotions and deal with grief and loss and all of those things. And yoga and meditation were really a godsend for me. They were what changed everything. And I was so changed by it that that's why I wanted to go into teaching and learn more about it, and then incorporate it into comedy, because artists, like many people, but especially in the world that I see, there's a lot of people who need some kind of support. And living in a lifestyle where things are so up and down, one minute you could be performing for 4,000 people in a big theater or in a stadium, and then the next minute you're performing in a flooded basement for two people. And so that's the pendulum. That's sort of how it works in entertainment. And so meditation and yoga and mindfulness have helped me keep that balance.
And that's so important. Now, yeah. I know that a lot of our listeners obviously are familiar with yoga, but could you explain what differentiates hatha yoga from other forms of yoga?
Mm-hmm. Hatha yoga is the initial yoga. It's like the first one that was taught. And so a lot of the other forms of yoga are branches that have grown from it. So if you were looking to learn yoga, I would always suggest studying hatha first, and then you can sort of see which branch really interests you. If you want to go into something like kundalini yoga, or you want to go into Iyengar yoga, which is with a lot of props. If you want to, some people like to use it and incorporate it with Pilates and things like that for more of the physical aspect. You can sort of branch anywhere off of there, but hatha is the classic yoga as to where it all began.
And you mentioned that practicing this kind of yoga really helped you get through grief and sadness and a difficult time. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what it was about those techniques that helped you?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I'll say meditation was something that my mom would always try to get me to do when I was younger. She taught me how to practice when I was, I think, 11 or 12. She learned it in her philosophy class. And one day we were out walking the dogs and she was like, "Do you want to learn this?" And I said, "Yes." And so I was introduced to it when I was quite young, but it would be something that she would always try to remind me of whenever I was going through a difficult time. And I didn't really listen to her until it got really heavy. So if I was going through stress in high school or university or something like that, she would say, "Oh, well, meditation might be something you want to try." And she would say it and I wouldn't listen. And then when I started experiencing some pretty heavy trauma, when my dad got sick and then when he passed, I learned, okay, this is something that can help me with this grief so that I'm not, at rock bottom or however you want to describe it. And so in way of how it helped was finding time to be still in meditation enabled me to allow any kind of emotions to come up. So anything that I was sort of storing from different experiences, I was given a chance to allow those emotions to arise, feel them, even though some of them are awful and I didn't want to, and I wanted to suppress them and just keep them in a jar. And it allowed me to have them come up, not be as afraid of them, and then let them go instead of just letting them sit inside me. So yeah, that's the best way that I can describe as to how it really changed me, what the thing was that did it. It was practicing yoga first, and then the last pose, Shavasana, is when you prepare for meditation. And so having done all of those postures prior to doing that, it allows you to just be a little bit more still in your body so that you are able to sit for long periods of time or lie down, however you prefer. And I think that I had practiced it before. I had practiced meditation before, but I didn't understand it. And then when I needed it, it became a very important tool for me.
You know, it's funny. Every time I do yoga, when I get into Shavasana, I always fall asleep, which is always embarrassing because sometimes I don't realize that I've fallen asleep and then the room is completely quiet and everyone's gone.
It happens more than you would think. You're not alone. It happens often. And that's just maybe that's what your body needs at that point, right? Because you're sort of going into that space. Mm-hmm. But meditation is sort of a mental state that can happen just before you sleep. So I might encourage you to try next time, if you can, just to see, okay, what does this feel like if I don't quite doze off, right? Like, how does this feel for my mind? I might say that.
I think it's so interesting that in many of the yoga classes that I've been in, people tend to like scoot out if they need to leave early, mm-hmm. and think that the Shavasana piece might not be as important. But it sounds as if that's really where we're integrating a lot of things and mm-hmm. where we're kind of preparing and allowing ourselves to release and relax.
100%. It's the most important posture by far. The sages and like the creators of yoga, they were long-term meditators. They were meditating for like 7, 8, 9 hours, and they were getting into these pretzel-like shapes and getting very stiff. And so that's how the asanas or the postures were created. They were created to release tension so that you could sit in meditation for longer. So in the West, since unfortunately some of us we've lost that, there's so much more focus on the physical side, which is unfortunate because yes, the postures are important, but the final pose, allowing yourself that time to be still, is, in my opinion, by far the most important.
You know, I also think another thing that Western culture has done that you mentioned is to discourage or not really teach us that emotions are okay and mm-hmm. that they're allowed to come up. And then when they do come up, what to do with them, which it sometimes is just kind of being there in the moment with them. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that? And if there was a specific teaching that helped you to know what to do when these emotions did come up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're right. There's a lot of understanding that we should just suppress things and not deal with them. And then, but unfortunately, you know, or I know, I think most of us know that if you don't properly deal with them, then they come out in other ways. I was someone who really struggled with road rage. That was a big thing. And like, I would be driving and just snapping on people. And it still happens now. Like, I'm fine to admit that, but it happens a lot less, and it happens at times where I haven't meditated that day, and I notice the difference that it has on me, because you, by spending this time, giving yourself this sort of gift of, okay, I'm going to allow this time to practice, I'm going to allow this time to sit and be still, you become less reactive and more just sort of involved, and you sort of recognize the other person's position, whatever it is, in terms of what you're approaching. So yeah, in terms of something like road rage, I noticed that that's something that, you know, maybe you were having a bad morning and all of a sudden you took it out on someone on the road who you don't even know, and then it affected them in some way, right? And yeah. So I see that a lot here. And one thing that I learned when I was in my teacher training was just that it's okay to have dark thoughts, angry thoughts, sad thoughts, all of these things, they're going to come up. We all have them. But instead of saying that they're not there, acknowledging that they're there and doing something that people like to call shadow work, where you're just shining a light on something and you're saying, okay, I see you. I see you, bad memory or bad thought or bad feeling. And I'm not denying that you're there. I'm not mad that you're there. I'm just acknowledging you. And it does a lot. It can do a lot.
I think that's so important, and it's interesting. On Twitter this morning, someone was talking about that shadowing, and you know how to actually acknowledge those, as you mentioned, those thoughts and those experiences. And I think that we're so conditioned to sometimes repress, and certainly I'm not an expert in this area, but certainly most of us will repress those things because it doesn't make us comfortable. We don't even want to think about it, mm-hmm. so we just acknowledge that it isn't there. But from what you're saying, and I'm sure Kelly would probably agree that, you know, part of the process is just kind of, you know, seeing that memory comes up or that unpleasant feeling and kind of moving forward. It's not that you're repressing it, it's that you're acknowledging its presence and you're just moving forward, mm-hmm, which I'm sure exactly. is much, much, much healthier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what I found in my work with clients is that it takes a lot of effort to continue to repress and not feel that emotion. It can be yes. very scary to feel it. But one of the metaphors that I most love is it's like we're holding this beach ball underwater. And eventually this emotion, this beach ball is going to pop out. And maybe it pops out as road rage, or maybe it pops out as we explode with our partner or mm-hmm. children. But eventually it's going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I like that analogy for sure. It's like it does take a lot of work. It's more work to suppress it than it is to let it come up. And a lot of the time when you do let it come up, it's not as scary as you might have thought it would have been. A lot of the time seeing it, it may not be great, but it may not be as bad as you had anticipated. And so the work that you were talking about to push the beach ball down actually involves a lot more energy than to let it arise and then let it go.
Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armour colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armour's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins, or antibodies, that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know that mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armrest Colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my Everyday Wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out. Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I first, I guess I was probably just graduating from college, I did a couple of years of therapy to deal with my parents' divorce, which was a good investment in myself. Mm-hmm. And the big takeaway that therapist taught me was the truth sets you free. You know, we spend so much energy and time trying to either repress a feeling or not acknowledge something or not speak our truth. And in actuality, doing so is so profoundly empowering when you finally let go of that. So I sometimes have to remind myself of that sometimes those tough conversations that I really want to avoid when I finally have them, whether it's personally or professionally, generally it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And it feels so much better. Like a huge weight has been lifted off your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Like there's a cloud over you that's just disappeared and you're like, oh, it's done. Oh, it's relieving, you know? Yeah.
And I think also our avoidance fuels our anxiety. So the longer we avoid things, the more anxious we become because the bigger it gets in our head. And so it feels so much bigger than when we actually go to have that conversation like Cynthia mentioned.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And Dina, I'd love to pivot a little bit because I know that some of our listeners are probably curious to hear about your TED Talk. Mm-hmm. Now, how did that actually transpire? Were you interested in doing one? Were you approached to actually do a talk? How did that process happen for you?
I was interested, but also the organizer was a guest on my podcast, on the Ego podcast, like were. Yeah. Yeah, she's a nurse practitioner and very keen about I think she's worked with TED for a little while now. And just she's in the mental health and the physical health world as well. So that was a big part of it. And then I attended one of her events a couple of months prior, got a gauge of the types of talks that were being presented, loved it, and then was asked to do one in December with you, Cynthia. So yeah, it was, so it was a bit of both. I was definitely keen to do one. And then, having her on the podcast was a big part of it. And very grateful. It was a really cool experience. I don't know how you found it, but I loved your talk. And I felt like we had a lot of similar ideas in the different, and our different approaches. And so it was cool to get a chance to meet you. And then there were a couple of other speakers who I saw at the previous TED event that I had as guests on the podcast as well. So,
Kind of love all those female connections that we make. And having never traveled to Toronto, it was nice to see a new city and experience, you know, all the cool things that Toronto has in a very brief trip, I will say, but I had a wonderful time. And much like you, I think, you know, part of what I do for myself every year is I always like to have one big scary goal. And so that was my big scary goal for 2018.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Kelly and I are introverts. I know sometimes people are surprised to hear that. Mm-hmm. But the thought of getting on a stage and having to commit something to memory was pretty terrifying for me. But, you know, once I got there and started speaking, it was like it just flowed and felt very natural, which, you know, really felt great. You get the energy from the audience. I mean, probably how you do when you do your improv and do your comedy work. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're connecting with the audience, it really, you know, kind of encourages and pushes you along, and kind of a really cool experience to go through.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just really cool to be able to blend the two worlds, because I know you were asking about that earlier. I have been doing comedy for a while, and I love writing jokes and performing, but I also love speaking. And so it was great to be able to have an opportunity to speak about this other part of my life that has been really impactful and I hope can help other people. So through TED, that's a great channel to be able to share that. And I've definitely felt the same way about your talk. And then you did another one, right? You did one recently.
Yeah.
How did that go? It looked wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I actually did that in March. And so that was a very different kind of talk, because part of my mindset in the hospital, because I was hospitalized for 13 days, I wanted to get home to my family. That was my first priority. And then second priority was that I felt that the message about intermittent fasting was so valuable that it was part of my kind of mental recovery. And so, you know, for the 27 days in between when I was discharged and when I did my talk, that was part of what I was, you know, really focused on. So it was, you know, a completely different experience, because it was stadium seating. It was a bigger TEDx event. You know, it was a really, this time was different. This time was definitely different in that I wasn't really talking about a story related to me. I was talking about a technique. And so it was freeing in many ways, because I think part of what made that first TED Talk for me very emotional was I was talking about something I had been through myself. And so second time around, it was just talking like, this is a great technique. This is something we all need to be talking about with our patients. I just didn't expect it to go kind of crazy viral. So it's been very humbling. Yeah, it's a really cool experience. And I'm glad that the information is getting out there, because I think more people need to know that there are things that are simple and free and flexible that they can integrate into their lives that don't require any gimmicks, which is a big pet peeve of mine. Huge.
Yeah, I can see it sometimes on your Twitter and stuff. I love it. Mm-hmm. But you're always giving information. You're not like criticizing. You're saying, here are some facts on something that you can help with, like with the intermittent fasting and stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I just think, and I think we're all on the same page, all three of us, that, you know, my message is meant to be positive and educational. It is not meant to be condemning, critical, you know, dismissive. I think we're all on our own journey, our own health journeys. And I just find that I'm more likely to invest in listening to someone if they have the same vibe, because I just think life can be tough. And so why not align yourself with people that, you know, make you feel good about yourself, you know, sometimes give you a kick in the pants if you need it. But, you know, definitely their end goal, their end, you know, focus is on improving the world and not just, you know, creating disharmony and disunity. There's definitely on social media, and again, I'm sure we all see this, examples of people who just make everyone's lives harder. And that's not the way I want to leave the world. So
no, that's not the message I get from you at all.
Oh, thank you. Good. Same for you and Kelly as well. Like-minded people for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to shift back to something we touched on before, which is this, the impact of stored emotions. So I think that the concept of storing emotions in our body might be a little bit foreign to some, or they might not really understand how that works. Can you talk a little bit more about how emotions are stored in the body and how they're released?
Mm-hmm, definitely. So we all know about, well, not maybe we don't all know, but we, there's, you may be aware of muscle memory. Yes. So it's a similar thing, and animals do it as well, where there might be an event that happens and there might be some things that are visible in the body, like a scar or a cut or something like that from an incident. But there's also the concept that emotions are actually stored in tissues in the body. And so this may be a concept that's foreign to some, and it's, you know, it's completely up for dispute, but it is something that I do in fact believe, as well as a lot of yoga practitioners and teachers. And there's a common thread that we see in a lot of our classes where there's a lot of release that happens. And so there are specific postures designed to help with detoxifying and releasing. And so I see personally a lot of patterns in my classes where certain emotions are stored in certain parts of the body. So the shoulders are a big one. So finding releases for that. But another big one is the hips in particular. And so whenever there is a posture or release that happens in the hip area, we will see a lot of people exploring emotion at that time. So a lot of crying happens in classes whenever we do hip releasers, maybe some anger, different feelings. And personally, in my own journey, I will have memories come up whenever I do certain poses, and particularly in the hips. And so, yeah, in terms of my experience, that's something that I see quite regularly. And that's why a lot of the time at the end of a class, you can feel, like we were talking before, about that weight being lifted. And so it's sort of coming off of certain areas in the body. A lot of people, and this might be something that you could speak on as well, Cynthia, that there's a lot of idea around stress being carried in the midsection of the body. So it's sort of held there, but this is more on the joints and the bone area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I tend to, you know, when I talk to patients or clients, a lot of people carry their tension in their upper chest and their upper back and neck. Mm-hmm. And so you walk around and you see people where they look like their shoulders are hunched up. And it's really because they carry so much tension. But obviously tension can be carried anywhere in the body. But typically I see it seems more back, neck, you know, chest, especially as people are spending so much time on their phones and they've got like tech neck, as they call it now, where their neck is constantly flexed. And so then, you know, they're drawing on their trapezius and their upper back muscles. And a massage therapist friend of mine was saying she can tell, you know, when people spend a lot of time with their neck bent looking at their phones, that tends to be, you know, kind of a modern day phenomenon. But, you know, absolutely, you can, you know, manifest tension all throughout the body. I think that, you know, that the hips in particular that you mentioned, it doesn't even necessarily have to be related to, you know, trauma, but it could be, you know, maybe a spouse isn't connecting with their spouse or has some, you know, unseated, you know, irritation. You know, definitely those hip openers can be helpful and beneficial. You know, I was reading the other day about women as they kind of head into perimenopause, that 5 to 7 years preceding menopause and then go through menopause, that yoga can be particularly beneficial for increasing blood flow and, you know, the female organ areas, which, you know, in many ways people kind of think of that time frame as everything dries up and goes away. And so that doesn't actually happen, but can be hugely beneficial if people are having issues with sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think also we're just programmed right now, at least again in the West, to sort of treat our bodies as an alien thing that's sort of separate from our minds and from the rest of us. And so by doing that, like not taking into account the physical effects of some things that can happen, like you said, it doesn't have to be trauma, it can be stress, it can be an experience. But that, you know, that's why I love yoga so much, because it reminds me, someone who often lives in my head, to come back into my body more. And so for me, I find that really, really beneficial, because we do experience everything with our entire being, whether we're aware of it or not. It's not just in the head. It's not just in thought. It's not just through conversation. It is through, in fact, the physical aspect as well, even if you can't see it.
And I think that's such a beautiful example of the power of the mind-body connection. I mean, that really is the mind-body connection. Mm-hmm. The timing was really interesting for this, because I've been into saunaing lately. And
oh, cool.
So, yeah, I went to do the sauna and there was some mix-up and my sauna cabin had been booked. So the owner of the sauna studio said, oh, why don't you try this massage bed that we have? And I was like, well, okay, I'm here. I might as well. So I tried it and it concentrated a lot of time at my shoulders and my upper back. And it was painful actually, but in kind of a good painful way. But I got home and for the rest of the afternoon, I just sort of had like this sadness, like this cloud about me that I couldn't shake and couldn't figure out what was going on. And then I just happened to be doing some research on you for this podcast and delved into this whole idea of emotions being stored. And sure enough, when I looked up shoulders and upper back, that's where sadness is often stored, which was just mind blowing. I mean, it's like, it's one thing to understand it and to know that that connection exists, but to really feel it and experience it in your body is a completely different story.
Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible. I've been using MitoPure for the last 2 years, and I've added this to my routine for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a foundational supplement for me and my family. It keeps things simple, and I know that I cannot get enough of urolithin A in my food to derive the same benefits. And if you're not familiarized with urolithin A, it's a signaling molecule, but it's also actively involved in anti-aging, energy production. And I take Timeline because of its remarkable healthy aging solution that activates key critical cellular pathways in my body. It's a total game changer for healthy aging. I alternate between using the soft gels and powder, depending on whether or not I'm traveling. And we know that restoring cellular energy is a key to enduring health. And this is concluded in a recent publication in Nature Metabolism, which is a top scientific journal, identifying that newly energized cells may provide many more years of healthy life to people. Yet as we age, we know that cellular energy production naturally declines and reduces our prospects of optimal health and longevity. That's the great thing about Timeline, is you can restore cellular energy and support healthy aging. I've noticed the biggest improvements in my energy and sleep levels. We know that Timeline is clinically shown to give our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria, new power. And when taken daily, it replaces aging mitochondria, so it upregulates mitophagy and rebuilds new ones, or mitogenesis. Timeline is the only nutrient that can do what it does. So Timeline renews your cells to a more powerful state. My listeners can get 10% off your first order at timeline.com/Cynthia. That's 10% off at timeline.com/Cynthia. I know you're going to love this product.
Oh, what a cool story. That's really awesome. I love that you shared that. That's like, and you're right. And so just being able to sit with that emotion, right? Like, when you have a massage is a great way for releasing. So if you don't, some people don't like practicing yoga, and that's completely fine. But then you might want to try a massage or acupuncture or something that allows those areas to loosen up, because like you said, all of a sudden those things start to lift. And by doing that, it's unfortunate feeling that feeling of sadness. And it can be a little bit strange in the moment because you're like, well, nothing happened to me today that was sad. I was enjoying a massage. In fact, it was a pretty great day. But actually by doing that, it means you're allowing yourself some time to let that emotion lift. And then do you feel better now? Like, did it go away?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It did. It kind of hung with me until the evening. And then when I woke up the next morning and felt great. And actually my shoulders and back felt a lot better the next day too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. And so then it's odd when it's unrelated, because I mean, that could have been from months ago. It could have been from a year ago. It could have been from, definitely not the day that you felt it, but just by allowing that to happen, it's gone. And so, like you said, it improved the shoulders, but also your overall well-being, because if the more you allow yourself time to do that, the less that's going to come up. Well, I don't know. I don't know everything about you.
No, you're exactly right. And mm-hmm. I think, like you mentioned, it's important to just be able to be with that. Like, I've done mm-hmm. enough training and work enough with my clients on just being present with your emotions and being mindful. So, not judging that or trying to make that mean something mm-hmm. that was negative or didn't make sense was important, to just allow it to be there. And I told my husband, like, hey, I'm just feeling sad after this. And just mm-hmm. allowing it, mm-hmm. I think was important. It's not easy or fun for sure, but I don't mm-hmm. think that everything in life is supposed to be easy and or fun. And we often learn from that contrast.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, I don't know. Again, this is just me speculating, but imagine if you had a lot of sadness and no massage and no way of sitting with it, how much that would affect you in the long run, right? Like, you see people with very slouched posture and various back problems, various neck problems, and so by just becoming aware that, like you said, the mind-body connection is there, then you, each time, you're taking a layer off on the emotional side, which is just as important as the physical side.
Right. And I'm sure you see this too, but I think that our body whispers what we need mm-hmm. and it keeps whispering until if we're not paying attention, it gets louder and mm-hmm. then it starts talking to us in a bigger way. So I think, some of these little emotional releases that we have can be our body's way of whispering to us that, hey, maybe we need to pay some more attention to what's going on here.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And sometimes it'll yell.
Yes.
Sometimes it'll scream. After I went through my divorce, I felt like a whole ton of bricks had been lifted off my shoulders. Like, it was so heavy. And all of a sudden I was just like, oh, like physically I felt something. And this was before I had gotten into yoga. And so I didn't understand like what that was. I was like, what's happening right now? But it literally felt like a shelf had come off of my back.
Wow. Yeah. So, that's powerful.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I think, sometimes we don't kind of acknowledge how we feel. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of work with women and asking them, food and mood, you ate something, how did you feel? And I think we've gotten so disconnected from our bodies. A lot of people struggle with that activity. It makes them feel uncomfortable. And so I remind them sometimes that's the idea, so that they can provide feedback about, maybe certain foods, they feel good at the time that they eat them. And then an hour later, it makes them sad or it makes them feel poorly. Mm. And how important it is to be connected to our bodies. And I'm sure in yoga, you see a lot of that people kind of go through the motions in life, and then they're doing something that's very physical, and it's a whole lot harder to hide that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even just it's a very vulnerable place to be lying down on your mat too, and just allow yourself to be completely still. Like, I remember the first time that I started practicing, I found that really hard. I felt very anxious, and I couldn't sit still, and I felt like people were looking at me. I spent a lot of time looking at the person beside me and what they were doing, and it took a long time to get to where I am now, and I still have a long way to go. But I realize now, like, the more you practice anything, that the more comfortable you get in your space. But the practice on the mat for me was it had such a large impact into how I act in the outside world, and how I treat other people, and how I treat myself, and just how I look at things, my outlook. And so because of that, I feel less agitated, less anxious, less stressed in all of my day, not just when I'm practicing.
It's really sort of a microcosm for how mm-hmm. you interact with a larger world.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And that you, by slowing down, like even just the way, like the names of the postures, like humble warrior, for example, mm-hmm. you're a warrior, but you're also remaining humble. So you're very aware and powerful in your stance, but you're not overbearing and arrogant or whatever. These are words, but you know, I think that again, like not being reactive, not letting ego take over, again, acknowledging ego, acknowledging dark thoughts, acknowledging, different variances of how you're feeling, but not letting those things take over.
Yeah, so, so true, and such good info. So before we close today, we would love for you to tell our listeners, give us some advice on the two things that you think would be important for improving wellness every day. So based on your yoga background, your comedy background, meditation, what two things would you tell our listeners that they could do?
I 100% recommend I call it stillness. You could call it meditation. I'll say meditation because people are more familiar with that, but meditation of some kind, any kind, whether it be an app. There's some great apps, like there's Headspace, Calm. Those are both available in Canada. I don't know if they're available in the United States.
Yep.
They are. Okay, great. They're both fantastic. I don't work for them. I'm not promoting them, but they're a great place to start. They have 5-minute meditations. They have 10-minute meditations. They have walking meditations, and they're guided, and they're just a great place to start in terms of getting comfortable with meditation. And just by doing that, allowing yourself those 5 minutes, some people find it very challenging when they're starting off. So I always say, just try 5 minutes. You can give yourself those 5 minutes and just see how that makes you feel. Keeping in mind that it's similar to working out in the gym. The first day you do it, you're not going to notice a big difference, but the more that you do it, you're building a muscle. So you start to feel that. So yes, number one, meditation of any kind. Stillness for me is I meditate when I'm still because it allows for those emotions to come up. I feel a lot more connected and grounded when I do it. And then the other thing is a physical practice of some kind. I know that we were talking about that a little bit earlier, and that some people do not like practicing yoga, and that's completely fine. It can be running. That's like a meditative thing for you. There was a guest on my podcast who runs and then he meditates. And it could be weightlifting. It could be playing basketball. It could be doing anything. But then I recommend pairing those two things together. So doing a physical exercise and then allowing yourself some time for meditation afterwards. Because by doing that, you've released a lot of tension in the body. And so it becomes a lot easier to sit still and meditate. So yeah, that'd be my recommendation.
That's so awesome and so simple, but yet so profound. If we just did those two things on the regular, mm-hmm. it would make a big difference.
And outside if you can, if I can add
yes.
that. Like if you can get outside, that's huge. Getting some vitamin D, being close to nature, you know, 100% for either or both. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate this. It's so nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, too. And if our listeners want to know more about you, can you tell them how they can find you?
Sure. My website is dinajackson.ca. So it's DenaJackson. And my social media is at ActionDJack, like Action Jackson, but DJack. And my podcast is called The Ego Podcast. So it's a lot like Cynthia addressed, it's about a lot of this stuff. And it's just interviewing different people who integrate these kinds of practices into their lives and their careers and how it helps them find balance. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing part of your day with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. And thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.